This is Purim Tavshin Samach Zayin. To begin, we are going to review the basic ideas of last week, the basic framework, because they will serve as a building block for what we will learn this week. So, we learned that the sense of smell plays a very important role in Purim. Mordechai is the main spice in the Ketores. Esther is Hadassah. Chayav Adam Lebsume Bepuria Besamim. We spoke about the Ketores also being that vessel where smell is offered up, incense is offered up. We associated the sense of smell with the Eitz Hadas. Remember, with the sin of the Eitz Hadas, explaining that it was the only sense that was untouched and untainted. It's the only sense that gives us an opportunity to attach backwards to the Eitz HaChayim, to Gan Eden. We spoke about the idea that on Yom Kippurim, the day that is like Purim, meaning that Purim is the model and this is just a copy, in a sense, although they seem so different in nature, they're really two sides of the same coin, that on Yom Kippurim we take the Ketores, the sense of smell, and we bring it into the Aron, to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where we find the Kruvim. We might not have mentioned that the only other place in Chumash that we find Kruvim mentioned is in the end of the story of the Eitz Hadas, where Hashem banishes them from Gan Eden and sets up Kruvim Lishmor Derech Eitz HaChayim, to guard the way to the Eitz HaChayim. And the word Lishmor does not mean to ensure that nobody goes back into the Eitz HaChayim. Lishmor is understood as in Shamartem Ma'od Al Nafshasechem, preserve your life. Or Lishmor Es HaShabbos, to preserve Shabbos, to ensure that it exists and it becomes, and it is not tainted, it is not spoiled. To preserve the Derech to the Eitz HaChayim. So we have two Kruvim, preserving, ensuring that there's always a way back to Gan Eden, to Eitz HaChayim. And on the top of the Aron, which holds the Luchos, which are Eitz HaChayim, also are two Kruvim. The Ketores, we know, is what we need to attach ourselves to. We explained the sin of the Eitz Hadas, and we explained Haman is the result of the sin of the Eitz Hadas. We made this is a very important point. We said that Haman is the result of the sin of the Eitz Hadas. He's not the Nachash, and he's not the cause for this of the sin. He's the result of the sin. We explained that only relating to the smell allows us to bypass, to survive the threats of Haman. To recap for a moment, we explained that Haman makes the following argument, and when we say Haman, we mean our worst enemies that seek our total annihilation, not just those that want our land or a particular complaint, but those that do not want us on earth, period, because of who we are. That's what we mean when we say Haman. And as the saying that the results of the sin are expressed through the Hamans of the world, we explained that Haman, or our worst enemy's biggest argument is, in the comparison of Perek Aleph and Perek Beis, which we won't go back to, you aspire to be like Perek Aleph, Tzelem Elokim, the invincible man, the godly man, the perfect man, the man with no limitations. That's what you wanted. But you were just limited further. So you've already failed once. Why do you insist? Why do you demand? Why do you drive us crazy and harass us? Every country you live in, you do this. You insist that man is more than just the nefesh chai of Perek Beis, the human animal. You insist that man is some kind of tzelem elokim and should aspire for more. And you become the conscience of mankind, which is Hitler's own words. And we don't want it. Leave us alone. We just want to be ourselves. And that's the argument we make. And they say, look, you're at Matan Torah. For one second, you achieve that high madrega that the human can achieve, that madrega of Perek Aleph, and you lost it. And every year on Yom Kippurim, you apologize for everything. So you can't be more than just a mortal, death-bound, regular man like everybody else. And stop pretending you can. And if 36 people in a generation achieve this, that's called success. There's a few righteous people. So they argue that there's no point to us always insisting that there's something elevated and divine about the human being. But we have still the neshama, the sense of smell, which is untainted, as we said, not involved in the sin. If you go back to the Pesukim, it's the one sense not mentioned. Then that sense of smell reminds us that there's truth. We will not accept this argument. There is more to man than just how man is described in the animal form as and what the Nachash tried to say, and what Haman, Haman uses as his argument. So we know that there is a direct route back to the Eitz HaChayim. We started at the Eitz HaChayim. As long as we preserve what is implied by the sense of smell, we can have a route back to the Eitz HaChayim. Things will come around. And the Ketores is brought into the Kruvim, who are guarding the same Eitz HaChayim. This is the building blocks, the foundation for today's shiur. Now what we're going to focus on today is two terms, two words found in relationship to Purim. One is the word Purim. The holiday is named for the Gezerah against us, to annihilate us. Hanukkah is not named for the decree against us. Hanukkah is named for the victory. Chanu Chafe. Purim is named Al Shem HaGezerah. That's something to think about and something to understand. Furthermore, the whole role of lotteries, of lots. You know that lottery means it's beyond our choice. We're throwing it up in God's hands. Our free choices have no effect on the result of the lottery. So we have lottery in a number of places. We have Purim, Kippurim. We have a lottery of the Kodesh for Hashem and for Azazel. The whole Eretz Yisrael is divided by lottery. Correct? Lottery functions in our most significant decisions. Why is that? And as if we release them from any human choice or involvement and say it's all up to God to decide. Yonah, that's right. Yonah's good too. Very good. These are the two things we're going to address regarding Purim. But here's another word, a very important word on Purim, and we have to analyze it carefully. And that is the word v'nahapochu. Let's think about this. V'nahapochu. And it was turned around. Okay? In Devarim, Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Vav, we find this word in relationship to Bilam. Turn for a moment to page 1054, Pasuk Vav. Listen to this. V'lo ava Hashem Elokecha l'shmoa el Bilam. Okay. But Hashem your God refused to listen to Bilam. V'yahapoch Hashem Elokecha l'cha et haklala lebracha. And Hashem turned around the klala to bracha. Here the klala itself became the bracha. In fact, in the story of Bilam, did we ever hear the klala? We only deduce what the klala was from the bracha. But their klala doesn't exist. It's not that he cursed us, and then Hashem neutralized the curses, and then Hashem made him bless us instead. The klala itself became the bracha. This is a key to understanding Vayapochu. As you did some research in the beginning of the class, you see that the same phraseology is used in the Megillah for the negative, for the destruction, as part of the Gezerah, and as part of the Yeshua. The very same phraseology has a different result. Same action, same cause, completely different result. The other thing that we have to think about is why, you know, this obviously Nahapochu is so important that we consider the victory one of the Nahapochu. We don't call it, we have never speak about on Purim of Yeshua, Geula, Hatzalah, Pidyon. These words do not enter in really to the way we describe Purim. It's always V'nahapochu. So what's at the core of Nahapochu? So let's go carefully and try to enumerate a number of examples where the very same event or the very same cause, sometimes the same phrase, has two completely different results. So let's start from the beginning. The 13th of Adar, it was meant to be the day of the destruction, the annihilation of the Jews, and it became the day of the salvation. Now, you realize that Esther had 9 months from when she accused Haman, and she sent out those letters that the Jews can stand up and defend themselves. But she picked the 13th of Adar. She didn't say, do it immediately. She insisted that it be the same day as the Gezerah. What about the choices of the queen? The choices of Queen Vashti led to Haman's elevation. And the choices of Queen Esther led to Haman's destruction, right? Both the queen is making choices. One leads to his being raised up in power, and one leads to him, he's being squashed completely. What about the phrase Harochvim Yatsu Dechufim. The riders ran out in a kind of frantic haste, one with letters of destruction, and then shortly after you see the same riders running in the same haste, and in their hands are different letters of salvation. What about by Yetzei Mordechai? In the beginning of the Megillah, Mordechai goes out in ashes, like a mourner, a few prakim later. By the way, the Megillah spans 12 years. A few prakim later, Vayetze Mordechai, and he's all dressed up in royal colors and royal robes. Same type of description, same type of action, totally different result. What about Zeresh and his advisors and his friends? First, he speaks to Zeresh and his friends, and what do they tell him? Get rid of Mordechai, hang him on the gallows, and you'll be clear, free and clear. The next time he speaks to Zeresh, what does she say to him? Mordechai is from the Jews, you're doomed. You're finished, it's over. Mm-hmm. Same conversation, and he asks advice, he gets two completely different answers. What about the gallows? That's obvious. The gallows, he builds them, he constructs them, he plans to hang Mordechai on them, they're standing there, and he hangs on them. Same cause, same action, different result. And the result is diametrically opposed to the purpose that the thing was done to begin with. What about the feast? In the first feast, Haman leaves feeling no one is elevated in this kingdom after the king more than I am, all pumped up. The second feast, there's no Haman left. Both feasts, two totally different ends. So we here are just some of the examples. You'll find more, I think, if you look carefully through the Megillah, of where we're dealing with a situation where we're not seeing so much that Haman's plans are defeated, but the plan itself serves the opposite purpose. In other words, it's no battle to defeat him and his plans. The plans themselves morph, you might say, into a completely different result. The quintessential example of we have in this in Halacha, but it's not applicable today, is Para Aduma. The same ashes, the same act of sprinkling, the same exact cause has two totally different events. One person becomes Tameh and one person becomes Tahar from the very same process. The process does not control the results. This is the rule. This is the story of Purim. The process, the cause, the actions taken have no control on the results. The results go two different ways, this way or that way, from the same exact action. What determines which way they're going to take? Something beyond us. Something certainly beyond Haman and his plans. So the first thing we're saying about Vinapochum is that it is not so much that we're speaking about a defeat of an evil person, but what we're speaking about is the plans themselves have two alternative results. And depending on the merit of the Jews, either one or the other result will come into play. Okay, that's the first and most important thing. Now, there is a concept in physics, and he points this out, and I checked it out, and I've learned about it a little bit. I'm no expert in physics, that's for sure, but the results are comprehensible in a basic way. There is a very strange phenomenon in physics. It's Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. And this is where Einstein reacted with that famous phrase when he said, I can't believe God plays dice with the universe. But Niels Bohr, and these are also very important scientists, very involved in ultimately with the division of the atom and all of that, and what led to the atom bomb and the greatest advances in physics, he disagreed. Now, the basic confusion that was the result of the uncertainty principles, they came to realize that a particle will behave differently based on the observer, that they could not determine the absolute reaction of a particle in a particular situation. It had alternative behaviors based on what seemed like the observer. And this is what Einstein would refuse to accept this. But there is a concept that there is an action, a cause, and we see this in the Megillah, and this exists in physics. It's confusing, it's counterintuitive, it's not rational. that the result is not necessarily a product of the cause, because the cause can yield different results in the same place in the same time. It can go in two different ways. So we're dealing with this when we begin to think about Vinat Pochum. In order to understand this further, we have to begin to see that the cause led was the purpose of most of these action was evil, was ra, but the result in the end was tov. Okay. There are two types of evil. Imagine the path, so to speak, to truth. We have a path, a road to truth. A road back to Gan Eden, right? The Derech, Lishmor Derech Gan Eden. There's two ways to get, there's one way to get there, which is walk on the road. That's what we, right? Walk in the direction of where you're trying to go. Now, some people will deviate from the road. Everybody probably deviates from the road at some point. They just fall off the path. So they stagnate on the side. Either it's because of apathy. They're not convinced that it's worth the effort. They have too much of a physical, biological impulse pulling them into, you know, mooring them down here, keeping them stranded on the side. Sometimes they get back on the path and continue straight. They see the light at the end and they move towards it, or they don't, a little slowly, a little more quickly. That's one way of getting to the end. And the evil associated with not getting there quickly enough is the evil of the Yetzer Hara. It pulls the person, sidetracks the person. There's another form of evil, okay, or ra, and that is that the person says, no, that's not the goal. That goal isn't over there. That's not the end. The end is over there, and he turns his back on the goal and walks in the other direction because he says there's an alternative goal, and it's the other way. Now, if we're talking about having in the way the Jewish people see it is the connection of humanity to Hashem is the end result. That humanity should express the will of Hashem, and everyone is trying to get there. Some, as we said, are being sidetracked. The ultimate Ra, which is Haman, which is our worst enemy, says, no, it's not a goal at all. There's a completely alternative goal, and I'm working as hard as I can to get there, and it's in the other direction. Now, what do we do with the fact that there is an argument in the world that there's an alternative truth, an alternative goal, an alternative way to live and purpose for life? What do we do with that? As long as that possibility exists in the world, that there are people insisting that there is an alternative, legitimate purpose to the world or reason to live or goal to aim for, and it's not Hashem, then there is something missing from the Hakara of Hashem in this world. Now, that's what we mean when we say, Ki Yad Al Keska. Amalek has, so to speak, a hand, and the word case is really kisei, but it's missing the aleph. And it's missing the aleph, as if that Hashem's throne is incomplete as long as there's those in the world making the argument that the mission of the Jews is not legitimate. It's a fantasy, as we spoke about last week. It's a lie. It's not going to get them to where they're going to go. They're torturing the world with it, and it's not true. And there's some other way to think about the world, and it doesn't involve the Jews and their perspective of God, and that's what we're working on. And we don't want the Jews here with their belief that this is one way to go. So what do you do when that perspective exists in the world? Now, here's the fundamental point. It's not enough that God should defeat those people. So we have Hashem Elokim HaMinatzeach, the victor. Means that they posed a real threat. They posed an argument for an alternative purpose, an alternative goal in life, an alternative way of life. And God defeated them, and now he won. So he's the winner, and they're the loser. That still grants some legitimacy, some truth, some power to their argument. They put up a noble fight. Yes, they were defeated. They weren't as strong as God. God is the winner, and they're the loser, but they still exist. Their argument still exists. The ultimate victory... it's not God the winner, it's Hashem Echad. Ein od milvado. There is nothing else. That whole thing that they concocted, that whole story doesn't exist. It never existed. It's not true. There's nothing to it. It's Hevel. It's not enough for God to be the mightiest. It has to be Hashem Echad and Ein od milvado. There's nothing else but Hashem. When we talk about the unity of Hashem, when we talk about the unity of Hashem, think about the unity of a path. Remember this road we were talking on? The unity of the surface of the globe, right? That's unity, where all points come back to, when you walk around and you follow a circle, you come back constantly to the same point, right? That's the unity we're speaking about. That's vina hapoch, because it means turn it around and turn it around and turn it around. What happens to the Hamans who say, that is a lie, and I have another vision of the world, and I'm going that way? Where do they end up when they walk around the globe or around a circle? They come right back to the beginning. This is the secret of Vinah Pochu. It's not the defeat of our enemies. It's the proof through the long course of history, and in Purim in a nutshell, that going in the other path leads you right back to what you tried to get away from. And there you are standing in front of it. So the same path that you take and your purpose is destruction, is a battle against HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his people in this world, that becomes the Yeshua. You just don't realize it till the end. In other words, nothing they do can impede our progress towards the goal. It actually furthers the path towards the goal. It furthers the closeness to the goal. It will lead back to the goal. The Gezerah for this destruction becomes the Yeshua. And there's nothing they can do about it. It must lead back. That is Vinah HaPochu. It's turned around, and it turns around, and it turns around. Do not think that we have enemies that must be battled and defeated, because that gives some legitimacy still to our enemy and their arguments. So God won. It's much more than that. Their own arguments, their own purpose, all their efforts will lead them to Ein Od Milvado. And that's exactly what you see in the Purim Megillah. Everything Haman did, every effort he put in, every thought he had, every plan he made, led him directly closer to becoming the source of the Yeshua. The gallows he made were the source of the Yeshua. Everything that, all the list we made, and it's inevitable. And you can't escape it. All paths will lead back to the beginning. As we said in what we spoke about last week, the smell reminds us that where we came from, Eitz HaChayim, the path back is still preserved. And we bring the Ketores into the Kodesh HaKadoshim by the Kruvim. There was never any way to avoid coming to the final goal anyway. Everything else that seemed like it was detracting from the goal was not detracting. It was taking the circuitous, long and tortuous route to the very same end. Now, we don't necessarily want to go through that long route, that tortuous route. That we wish we could go the quick route, the quick, direct, you know, sure way. But Golus has taken us, and our enemies have participated in this, of taking us back to where we're meant to come. And how we understand Bilam. It wasn't that Hashem, that he cursed, and Hashem neutralized his curses. The curse themselves, the words themselves came out as bracha. The purpose, the effort he put in, expressed itself in the end. He walked so hard in the other direction and came out where he was meant to be anyway, where the world is meant to be, and out of his mouth comes bracha. It's a hipuch. The ultimate geula, Purim, is a glimpse at the light at the end of the historical tunnel. The ultimate geula is represented through Purim. In the end, what will become the final Yeshua is the final turn where you walk and walk and walk and walk, and when you come over the last curve, you see the light of dawn one more time. There it is, the glimmer of the light that you were walking away from. And you don't see it till the end. It's a long process, and here we are. And everything was part of coming back to that original point. We have the famous, and this makes sense now, I hope, the famous recommendation. It's not one of the four mitzvos of Purim, but it's a recommendation that a person should drink a little bit extra on Purim. Why? Chayav Adam Libsume, remember? Ad lo yada, until he doesn't know the difference between Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Now we understand what that means. Arur Haman is Baruch Mordechai. Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai are the same, a part of the same process. All of Haman's evil plans against us, and his all that he concocted, all that makes him cursed, leads to, becomes, turns into Baruch Mordechai. And you don't have to argue with Das, Adalo Yada. It's not that you have to make an argument. This is good, and this is bad. Look, we spend our time now, as Jews, constantly arguing in the media, again, defending the legitimacy of Israel to exist, of legitimacy of how we behave vis-a-vis the Palestinians, the legitimacy of the Jewish people to live in Eretz Yisrael. We're constantly saying, Mordechai, this is good. And we have to say, we have to defend, we have to make arguments that, that the Iranians are bad, and that, we have to defend the lies that are being perpetrated against us, and we have to make arguments in the media that it's not true, and this is an exaggeration, and what happened in Jenin isn't the way it was reported. So this is good, and this is bad, and making these elementary arguments, which you think is the most basic and obvious, should be obvious to everybody else. We have to make arguments. Mordechai is Baruch, Haman is Arur, this is can't the world see it, we're not the bad guys. But there comes a point where you don't have to make the arguments anymore. The Arur, Haman, and all of their efforts is Baruch Mordechai. It will become Baruch Mordechai. They will lead directly to that recognition through everything that they try. Now, here are some other examples of the usage of the words Vayapuch. We have the concept of in Perkei Avos, Perek He, Pasuk Chavav, Mishnah Chavav. Then Bag Bag Omer, they turned it into a song, so you might know it. Hafachba v'hafachba, turn it around, and turn it around, dekula ba, because everything is contained in it. V'techze, v'uba techze, and with it, when you turn it around, and when you turn it around, you'll finally see. You'll finally have clarity. If you keep turning it, you'll have clarity. You'll eventually see, and then the Mishnah goes on, and grow old with it, and never abandon it. Everything is contained in it. Grow old and gray with it. Depart not from it, for there is no better pursuit for you than the Torah. Hafachba v'hafachba. Keep turning it, and eventually everything will come back to the origin, and everything will make sense. We also, regarding Purim, we talk about hafachta mispedi lemacholi. Hafachta, you switch, v'hanapochu, mispedi, my hesped, lemachol. Lemachol is a dance. The Maholi, you turn my hesped into a celebration. Hafachta, this hesped itself became a celebration. Now, Mahol is a form of dance where we stand in a circle, where we rotate in a circle. That is the specific definition of Mahol. We go in a circle. And as we realize, we're talking about the circle here, the end is the beginning. There is no beginning. There is no end at the circle. There's also another point about the circle. Everyone on the perimeter of the circle is equidistant from the central point. Nobody is closer or further from the central point. Hafachta mispedi lemacholi, you turned my hesped into I have a whole new way of seeing it. What looked like my destruction was no further from the shoresh, from the point, from the purpose, from the truth, than what looked like my hatzalah. Nothing was further or closer. They were both, we were rotating around the central point, and we were always the same distance from that central point. And when we thought we were further, we were not further than we were when we were closer. Hafachta mispedi lemacholi. There is a special requirement to drink wine on Purim. Now, Purim is right near Pesach. In fact, the halacha is you have to have Purim near Pesach, which is why when there's two Adars, you put Purim in the second Adar, Adar Beis. And the first Adar is called, of course, Purim Katan, which happens to be the yahrzeit of my grandfather, by the way, Rav Shimon Schwab. Anyway, Purim and Pesach always are near each other, and they both revolve around, the celebration revolves around wine. But the wine of Pesach and the wine of Purim are very different in nature. Don't forget, Nisan is the first month, and Purim is the last month. It's, again, the circle, okay? Pesach is the beginning of Jewish history. Purim represents the end, as Chazal say, and this is strange if you think about it. Purim is the end of miracles, like the dark, like the dawn is the end of the night. Purim is the end of miracles, like the dawn is the end of the night. By the way, Esther, Tehillim Chaf Beis, Ayelet HaShachar, the dawn, you're supposed to read that, especially. Esther represented by the dawn. But how do we think that Purim, being the end of miracles, would be the beginning of Hester Panim, the beginning of the night, but it's compared to the dawn, the end of the night. Now, we always think about the dawn as something positive, the end of the night. So now Esther is the end of miracles, as the dawn is the end of the night, as if miracles are a bad thing and finally we're through with them and now it's the dawn. What do we mean? Well, and it relates to the concept of Yayin. From Pesach till Purim, which was the first Galus, there were miracles done for us by God. And they basically involved God breaking into nature, Hashem breaking into nature and changing things around, and as we have coined the phrase, shock and awe, and surprising people into submission. Shocking, awing people into submission. That is the miracles from Pesach to Purim. Okay? Purim begins a whole different era. It becomes, the miracles are of a completely different nature on Purim. There is no splitting of the sea and falling of Mon and any type of supernatural phenomenon on Purim. Nothing, zero. So it's the end of the miracles, and this represents the dawn, as if that's a good thing, that we no longer have miracles, and things function through nature in some type of way that just looks like a lot of good coincidences. That's a good thing, it's the dawn. Well, the way we see it is like this. As long as Hashem has to break into nature and force people into submission, force them to know that there is God, and that comes from the outside, imposed upon the people, from the outside, I am one God, there is no other God, don't try to go against me because you can't win. Forced upon people. As long as we're still in that mode, we're back where we started before, where God is fighting, God is the mightiest, God is the winner. But it's not Einod Milvado. There's an alternative desire to go a different way, and Hashem opens the heavens and says, you can't, you have to only go my way. But it's still a competition. By the time you get to Purim, we're done with those kind of miracles. The miracles of Purim, as we began to say, is that the free choice of the human being leads to the diametrically opposed result that they had in mind. And eventually, when our own free choice and our own plans lead to exactly what we tried not to, we've come around the circle and here we are, what we were trying to get away from, then eventually you give up. When you're constantly frustrated and all your efforts lead you back to what you were trying to destroy and avoid, eventually you give up. Those are the miracles of Purim, and they're much greater in nature than the miracles of Pesach, which is why we say in the end of days, we will have no Yom Tovim, not even Pesach, only Purim. And the miracles of the future will pale, will make the miracles of Pesach pale in comparison. But the miracles of Purim will be completely different nature. Do not expect open miracles, nay skulloi, like the splitting of the sea. It's a completely different nature. It's the bechira of the purpose, of the person himself, that leads only to their own destruction and frustration until they give up and they say, Einod Milvado. This is the secret of the wine. There is wine on Pesach and there is wine on Purim. Pesach, the wine, it helps us, it punctuates the Haggadah. At every bracha, we drink a glass of wine. It's very controlled. It's very contained. We ask questions. How is it? What is Hashem? Who is Hashem? What does Hashem want? This is the infancy, the birth of the Jewish people. We're just discovering Hashem and the will of Hashem. By the time you get to the end of Jewish history, that's Adar, that's the end of the year, that's Purim. There's a whole different kind of wine. The wine is free-flowing. We don't have to ask questions anymore, question and answer, like Haggadah. We don't need to make rational arguments. It's self-evident. It's axiomatic, ein od milvado. Our own choices lead us to that decision. Isn't it strange regarding wine? When you pick the grape off the vine, you would think that you would make borei pri hagefen, right? Hagefen. It came right from the vine. But you don't. Make a ha'etz. Years later, when you have a beverage that doesn't look like wine or taste, look like a grape or taste like a grape or smell like a grape, and if you didn't know the process, you would never know it came from a grape. Then, when it's far, far, far from its origin, very disconnected to the vine that it came from, completely different in nature, then we say, Borei Pri HaGefen. It's the circle all over again. You think you're getting further, you're developing, you're changing, you have no connection to, you come right back to the beginning, you're the same expression of the origin, of the beginning. Borei Pri HaGefen. And this is the secret that gives the Jewish people the strength to persevere. We are not getting further. We're coming closer, but no one's noticed it yet. And who's bringing us closer? Who's getting the world to the point where everyone will stand up and say, Einod Milvado? All of the nations that try to annihilate us, who are frustrated, who have finally, at one point, eventually, they will stand up and say, we've all tried in every way we can. They're indestructible. And here we are, and they're back in Eretz Yisrael, and they're back with their religion, and they're back with their leadership, and they're back with their base of Megdash, and we, somehow we're going to see, we brought them here. Actually, it was Esther, who Haman put into the throne, who gave birth, either biologically, some say ideologically, to Daryavesh, who returned the Jews to Yerushalayim. He brought them there. Haman brought us back to Yerushalayim, but he couldn't see it yet. This brings us to our last idea about Purim. Why the holiday is as Al Shem HaPur. Because the Purim, the Gezerah, is the Yeshua. Right? The Gezerah is the Yeshua. Some of our most significant decisions are left to God's, and left in God's hands. La Azazel, La Hashem, how to divide up the land, these type of things. In other words, we know, and Purim and Yom HaKippurim remind us of this, that human effort is important. Human effort goes so far, but in the end, make no mistake, the effort we put in, whichever way we put it in, positive or negative, will lead to the same results, will lead to the same end. So in the end, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's desire that will be fulfilled. We just have our choice of which path we take to get there, the short, straight path, or the long, circuitous, painful, tortuous path. But in the end, these decisions, we recognize they're Hashem's intervention. All paths lead to back. Now, this is what we say, that in the end, Umala kol ha'aretz deya es Hashem, kamayim el yam mechasim, that as all rivers will run to the sea, in the end, all knowledge will announce that there is only one Hashem. This is the secret of Purim. The secret of Vinaha Pohu. Turn it around and turn it around. And so it gives us confidence. And Yom HaKippurim is the day where HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a way to stay on the path. To stay on the path. The shorter path. The more direct path, hopefully. How to avoid the other possibilities. I wish everybody a wonderful Purim. An additional note to this Purim Shir, someone has just pointed out that in the Megillah, in the conclusion, records that many people became Jews. Rabbe me'ame ha'aretz misyadim, ki nafal pachad ha'yehudim aleihem. That the fear, not min ha'yehudim, from the Jews, that they were afraid of the Jews, but the yira of the Yehudim for Hashem also came to clarify to them, and they also felt inspired by the same yira. And began to see things the way the Jewish people saw them.